Music provided by Armstrong. Visit armstrongofficial.com to hear more badass music.
Welcome to the TriCast Gaming Podcast.
Greetings and welcome everyone to episode number 95 of the TriCast Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Grimlock, Philip Keeney, and I'm joined tonight by Jason Neon Andrews. Jason, I did it again where I like say my name, like my gamer tag name first, because for so many episodes of the show, I did it Grimlock, aka Philip Keeney, and I don't like it, but I can't break the habit. What am I going to do?
You're not very good. So, you know, this is to be expected.
It's a commentary on my quality as a host.
You know, you're just flawed, right?
We're all flawed human beings, right?
It's debatable.
Well, it seems like you're in fine form.
All of us. I mean, that's pretty broad paint strokes you're taking there, buddy, okay?
Well, it seems that you're in fine form this week. I trust you're doing well.
Doing good. Doing good.
You're doing good? All right, yeah, excellent.
I finally got to watch the Moon Knight season finale.
Excellent stuff, yeah.
And I did go, for the first time in a long time, saw a movie on its release day.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty excited about that, which clearly that means I went and saw Doctor Strange.
Doctor Strange, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to try to go this week on Tuesday night, but it just couldn't work. I typically go see these movies with...
Well, it came out Thursday.
It
was last week. Sorry. That's correct.
Yeah, I was like, wait a minute. I thought it came out last Thursday. Yeah, okay. So I typically go to see these movies with my good friend Steven Anderson, who writes into the show sometimes. Unfortunately, we could not make it work this Tuesday, but we are in the wives' calendars for next Tuesday night, which means it's official.
Dang.
We have got our clears.
I did the whole sneak off and I was just gone. And the wife's like, where are you? And I'm like, do I respond that I'm at the movies or do I just not respond and wait till I get back? And I'm like, yeah, I should probably respond. I'm at the movies. And she was like, I'm so mad at you.
I am working late tonight.
Yeah, that's right. I won't ruin anything with it. All I will say, and this is not ruining anything because literally the title is, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, right? So clearly it has to do with the multiverse, right?
Right.
Yep. And you've seen Loki and you've seen Spider-Man and the good news that I like so far, and maybe which is bad news for you, is I don't think you like the multiverse. You don't like the idea of the whole thing.
Yeah. It gets a little wild.
Whereas I'm okay with it right now. I'm having a lot of fun with it because, you know, we're getting to see, you know, they're doing a good job of bringing in actors and characters from previous movies and things like that. It's fun, right? The nostalgia aspect and things. The good news about that is I'm full all in on, we are still in prime Kevin Feige, where he is got a master plan and everything lines up and stuff happens. And you're just like, oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And we saw a tiny little hint of this 7 movies ago and, you know,
glorious it is to have a film director.
Yes. Right.
That sort of plans everything out ahead of time rather than just, throwing shit at the wall
and
looking at you, Star Wars.
With that, I will say, yeah, absolutely. And with that, I will say, very early on, once we were past Iron Man, we real quickly got into, you know, Avengers pretty quickly after just one Thor movie, the first Avengers happened semi early, right?
Right.
And immediately in credits, whatever, it was Thanos. He's background, but you knew okay, he's the big bad at the very end. we're working toward him. And everyone that follows, you know, comics at all knows that Thanos is all about the Infinity Stones, right? So ultimately, right. everything led, and it all followed a path and happened, and all of them connected and led toward Endgame.
Right.
The good news is this is all leading toward, you know, and I don't know if this is the final movie for it, but essentially it's leading towards Secret Wars in the comics, like, which is all about multiverse, right? So like at this point, I think, and this is where I say it's bad for you. At this point, I think basically every single movie minus one little one-off here, because we did have the one-offs, or like right. the initial Guardians of the Galaxy didn't really have a whole lot to do with the main stories of other, you know what I mean? Like there's things right? Like same thing with Ant-Man. It didn't have a whole lot to do with, you know, the main story. Not that they don't tie in, but I think basically every single movie is going to have a major multiverse tie-in, conflict, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I guess
until we get to the big bad. So
I guess I better get ready for that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. I'm excited to see it because Doctor Strange is one of my favorite characters from the movies leading up to Infinity War or Endgame, I guess was the last one, right?
Just real quickly, I'm going to break in on you because you said he's one of your favorite characters. I just learned the day before yesterday, the day before, I guess, you know, it hadn't been like laid out in front of me, but did you realize that Doctor Strange was released? And then between Doctor Strange 1 and Doctor Strange 2, which is the movie we just watched, you've had all three of the Spider-Man movies.
Wow. Well, I mean, everyone knows that Spider-Man is my favorite Marvel character. Favorite. So, yeah, so you know, that's you okay. Much,
but
yeah, that's okay. No, I like Doctor Strange though. I think I like him in the doses that we've gotten of him. Like,
yeah.
I think if we had, I don't think he's the kind of character that if I was like all out you get all out Spider-Man, lots of Spider-Man. I'm good with that. And maybe not many people are, but I'm good with that.
Yeah.
And I think he can work as an all-out character up there a lot, but I think Doctor Strange is one that would get old if he was in your face a lot. So I don't know. I'm glad that we've had him in good doses so far. But I do like him, and I do really like what's her official name? Scarlet Witch? Is that her official name, or what are we...
Depends on... I can't comment.
You can't comment. Okay. Well, I thought that was her superhero name, Scarlet Witch. Is that not correct?
Or she's Wanda Maximoff.
Okay. Does it changes in this movie? Is that what you're trying to like dance around? Okay.
That's fine.
I won't press any further, but yeah. Okay. Wanda Maximoff, which I thought she was called Scarlet Witch, but
no, in the comics she is. When has she ever been called the Scarlet Witch until basically the end of Loki?
I guess you're right.
She was never called Scarlet Witch. Everyone knew her as the Scarlet Witch. She was never the Scarlet Witch until literally roll credits of WandaVision. I say Loki, but it was WandaVision.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll call her Wanda for now. So I do like her character as well. So I am pretty excited to see this movie, and I know they're both heavily in it, obviously, even though it's called Doctor Strange. But
also, I loved it, but I have apparently heard that it's not been received super, super well. Not that it's been like a critic, and it's not like a Morbius type of movie, but people are kind of meh. I think it overall, there's probably more people like you that are not as crazy about the multiverse, you know, storylines.
I could see
probably ultimately what it is.
I could see it. Well, what is
it? You look at the score so far.
Yeah, I'm just gonna look at Metascore. It's got a 60 on Metascore with a 6.4.
Not great for a Marvel show.
With a 6.4 user. So yeah, it definitely suffers a little bit.
I really liked it.
Yeah, I think that some of this
I have some of my things about it that I'm kind of like, you know, but I liked it.
Yeah. See, I think that some of the critical response to these Marvel movies comes down to this whole idea that, well, they're Marvel movies, they're action hero movies, and we've had a lot of them, and, you know, they're trite, and you know, they're not going to be Oscar winners. So right. It's kind of hip right now to hate on them. But for me, like, I just take everything at face value. And so, like, to some degrees, that means I'm not going to have like a deep conversation about the hidden lores of things in movies. Right. But also that means
we should, because Marvel has fit that bill so far.
Well,
they are great with the Easter eggs and the things that are not happening by accident. Man, they've been so good at that.
Yeah. I mean, maybe talking about lore in a Marvel movie is not the right, but I can look at something at face value and just say, was that entertaining or not? Right. Did the main story woven in front of me work well or not? Did I care about these characters presented in front of me or not? And I can do that a lot better than I think a lot of other people can. Yeah.
So next week, here's what I would like to do, because I do want to hear your take on it, because I know your multiverse, thought process.
Right.
So I think next week we'll only still be a couple weeks removed from the show. Right. We'll probably do at the end of the show, a little like a, hey, spoiler warning, the very end of the show. And we talk about it a little bit.
I like it. Yeah,
that's cool.
That sounds like fun. All right, so before we move on into games, Moon Knight season finale, anything you want to say about that since you said you saw it?
I really liked it. The whole series has been great. They definitely do a really good job of, you know, to this point, pretty much all of the Marvel TV shows have felt standalone. Like, I've not felt like, it just felt like they were a movie that just was broken up into episodes. So you got more character development, right?
Yeah.
I don't like expect to find a Loki season two. I mean, I'm not saying there can't be, but I don't expect to. WandaVision, I don't expect to have a second WandaVision season, right? Like,
right.
Whereas this, I very much feel like, okay, we'll get a Moon Knight season two. Like, I very much think so. They definitely set up to either have a movie or a season two. There's no question.
Right.
And then my other thought is, I know he's Captain America now. But after seeing Layla at the end of Moon Knight, why do you need a Falcon? Because she's way damn cooler than Falcon. Way damn cooler than Falcon. And she's more powerful. Like,
right.
Why would you ever need a Falcon when you have that?
Yeah, she was a really dope character.
Yeah, she was.
I think for me, I'm torn on this show because I thought there were characters, and it's really cool, like how he has the split personalities and how they delve into that portion of the psyche. And how they do actually really legitimately create two very unique characters that you care about in different ways. And you care about this sort of almost brotherly story of theirs at the end. I think that is really cool. And they did a really, really good job with that. And I have to say that the show really should get some recognition for that in its character arc there. But when I look at the overall story, what I always struggle with shows and games that mess with realities. Like, what is and isn't reality?
Sure. So like, at the very end, you're like, okay, which one's the real one? Yeah.
Well, or like, is it fake? Is the whole show fake? Or like, will he turn up in the next Spider-Man movie fighting alongside Spider-Man with his split personality? Like, I really honestly don't know.
Yeah.
And that's what kind of like bums me out a little bit. Cause I'm like, well, because I like to take things at face value, I'm like, well, what do I believe in now? I don't really know.
Right.
But you know, that's a me thing. And I recognize that for sure.
I get you. So I enjoyed, like you did, the character development within a character, right? And what I thought was happening was that essentially they were killing off one of the characters, you know? And I was like bummed about that for a little while. Yeah. Like, okay, now we've lost Steven, right? And I was just like, okay.
Yeah, spoiler.
But then they bring him back, right? And, but they like utilize him, like he's interweaving within an action scene. They're interweaving both of them in, and they're like interacting with each other. And it's almost
really cool.
Yeah, it is. It's almost like the way I kind of compare it is, it's like in Civil War when Bucky and Iron Man are fighting, or Bucky and Cap are fighting against Iron Man, and they like have this like back and forth, and they're kind of like working together and talking. It's almost like that, but within one person. Yeah. Where they're like talking and working together and fighting and like teamwork. It was just cool and a little unique. I liked it.
Yeah. Very, very neat. And I will say, I'm not going to say what it was, but I will say that the post-credit twist I saw coming like three episodes back.
I'm trying to remember specifically what it was, but
yeah, if you can't remember, I'll talk to you afterwards. I don't want to say on the show, but it's you'll be like, I think I remember specifically
what, because it's all bleeding into like the one show now. I think I remember what the post was, but
All right. Yeah, we'll talk afterwards. Okay. I think we should go ahead and get into some video games because we got a mammoth show. So let's get started. Because you know what? Each and every week we do get together to channel our virtues through the Triforce to provide you, the listener, all the hottest topics from the mythical world of video games. We also add in as much of our colorful thoughts and fill up monologues as you can handle in a week simply because we love video games and discussing them. If you like what you hear, please consider subscribing on your podcasting app of choice. And if you really enjoy it, please share on social media or directly with your friends. The show continues to grow thanks to all of your wonderful support. You can find us on Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram, all at TriCast Gaming P1, and on our website, TriCastGamingPodcast.com. DM us on any platforms with your questions, thoughts, comments, whatever it is. We'd be happy to share on the show. All right, before we jump into what we're playing, I wanted to mention this real quick. I thought about just putting, because normally I put game delays in the game announcement section at the end, but this is such a big piece of news.
Yeah, I saw this and I was like, where's he going with this? Did we say something funny
No.
I was curious. So
So I just slotted this right in here up front because I just feel like we have to talk about this up front.
So it's not a correction for us. It's a correction for them.
No, it's not a correction at all. I probably should have just deleted the corrections banner from our show notes this week. I just wanted to shove this in here right at the start because I felt like it was such big news today. But here, I'll read this out real quick and then we can kind of talk about it briefly. Bethesda has officially delayed the release of both Starfield and Redfall from this year to 2023. In a statement published on Thursday, the Xbox-owned publisher said it needed more time to develop the games. Quote, "We've made the decision to delay the launches of Redfall and Starfield to the first half of 2023. The teams at Arkane Austin and Bethesda Game Studios have incredible ambitions for their games, and we want to ensure that you receive the best, most polished versions of them. We want to thank everyone for their excitement for Redfall and Starfield. That energy is a huge part of what inspires us every day and drives our own excitement for what we are creating." Now, this post generated a lot of response online, ultimately getting Phil Spencer to tweet out a response saying, quote, "These decisions are hard on teams making the games and our fans. While I fully support giving teams time to release these great games when they are ready, we hear the feedback. Delivering quality and consistency is expected. We will continue to work better to meet both of those expectations," end quote. So my sort of stance on this real quick, and then I'll flip it to you, Jason, is that I genuinely believe that if a game is not ready to release, it is better to delay. Delaying games to allow for enough time to release in an appropriate state, i.e. you don't pull a CDPR with Cyberpunk, or, you know, similarly, you don't pull a Halo Infinite where you release the game, but like the live service content's not ready to follow up with it. So you get a weak first year of the game. It's important to have those things ready. But I really genuinely do think that some delays hurt their platforms, hurt their publishers, and hurt their devs because, you know, this was the big ticket for Xbox players this year. This is what we knew about. This was the only thing that we knew about. There's been no flagship game released so far in 2022, and there is now currently no flagship title for Xbox scheduled to release for the remainder of 2022. If they genuinely do not get a first-party game out in 2022, genuinely, what the fuck, Xbox? I do not understand it. You've had so many studios and games developing that keep getting pushed and delayed. And I don't get how you can get into this situation. You have currently what, like 25 studios between Xbox and Bethesda, and not one of them can get a game out in 2022. I mean, I hope this summer showcase proves that, you know, maybe Forza Motorsport's coming out later this year. Maybe there's something else for fans to look forward to later this year. But this is a big black eye on Xbox. And Xbox has, you know, you had Halo Infinite, then you had the Halo show, and now you've got this. I think it hurts. But that's my take on it. I'll flip it to you, Jason.
Okay, so I think it hurts. I agree with you. It's better to, you know, and Adam had said this, you know, in our group message. So I'll credit him to, you know, saying like that they just don't want to become the next Cyberpunk, right? And, you know, I agree with that. You definitely don't want to become the next Cyberpunk, right? And get right. all of that really negative, bad press. But therein lies the problem, press, right? And ultimately, because these are public companies and they're publicly traded and they, you know, they make announcements around, you know, quarters and around fiscal years and around, because it's good for their business, even mm-hmm. when they don't look, even when, you know, Starfield is not released, when they announce Starfield, they get an increase in their money because it works well for their stock prices, right? Like, right. So the press and releasing and announcing these things is also a moneymaker for them, right? And so that's why they do it. But right. the problem is they do it so far in advance that they essentially pigeonhole themselves in to these numerous, you know, delays, rather than, all right, let's wait until we know we're getting close on a product and then say, hey, in 6 months we're coming out with something, or in 9 months we're coming out with something. Not like, hey, we're announcing this 3 years before it happens, right? Like, you know, we're thinking about doing X, you know what I mean? And we're going to talk yeah. about some of those today, where people are talking about, like, we're going to be doing something and it will release in 2024 or 2020. Like, it's just so early. You yeah. set yourself up, but they do it because of the money that comes around, you know, them being a public company and the press release. But, and whereas there lies the problem is now they have all of this internal pressure and external pressure to deliver on that date, because right. the company is going, say, let's put it in this perspective of Xbox going like, hey, we penciled you in as our, you know, major title update for this, you know, for this year. And we have all of this investment and all this money in Game Pass and this and that. And you were a big part of that. And if you come back out of that, it really hurts us. Right. And so they get, I think the reason why a Cyberpunk happens is because there's so much pressure from, you know, a CEO, from a board, from, you know, negative press, from of making it happen on time, so that these XXX other negative things don't happen to them, typically again around a stock price, right?
Right.
And so then they get rushed or pressured into doing it, and then it's bad. I mean, how many games have we seen that at launch are really, really bad? You know, Anthem was awful. You know what I mean?
Right.
That game should have never been released. But it's, again, it's a public
Battlefield company, 2042. EA,
Battlefield 2042. And a bunch of them happen because they get themselves pigeonholed in, because they had to make this announcement because they wanted the money for it releasing, you know, on the stock market and being good for their, you know, fiscal reviews, et cetera. And then needing to release it because it fit into the time slot of their next little, you know, yeah. fiscal review or quarterly. And so
yeah.
they get forced in. And so I'm with you. I think it should be delayed, but ultimately they're making business decisions that aren't always best for the gamer. They're doing right. it what's best for their bottom dollar in occasions. And right. I think that's really the problem.
Yeah. I guess I don't really know understand. What the fix for that is. I don't understand why they can't look. And I know game development is different to making movies, but I don't understand why you can't look at this and say, I think we could hit November 22. So let's go ahead and announce that it'll be by summer 23.
Sure.
And then if it's ready early,
you're a hero. You know,
we could, yeah, exactly. I've never seen a game do that.
That is setting realistic expectations. I mean, that is a major part of what I have in my job, right? Like, I'm all in with you on that call, by the way. You know, you're always come out looking better when you're like, great news. By the way, we've decided we're going to announce this 6 months early. Like, people are like, oh, shit. You know what I mean? Like, imagine that hitting Twitter. You know what I mean?
I fear that, though, you'll get a bunch of these like, oh, is it actually ready?
Well, I mean, I get that, too. I mean,
no one trusts the gaming industry at this point.
So, the last little thing I want to say on this, I'm so effing tired of we've had game delays. The industry has always had game delays. Right. It has ridiculously ramped up after COVID. I mean, every damn game. And I'm so tired of it. They are clearly doing something wrong. There's clearly way too much pressure, way too much timeline rush. It is definitely not the lack of people. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah,
and it is definitely not, you know, the COVID excuse of, you know,
social
distancing, all that's gone. And even while it wasn't, they're like the one industry that is fully set up to be able to, like, you just sit at home on a damn computer and you just like it.
Yeah.
It should have never affected this industry. It should have never affected this industry.
Yeah,
and it has crushed this industry. And I'm so freaking sick of it.
Yeah.
They've got to get their shit together. And the problem is it's industry freaking wide. And it's all about the unrealistic expectation they're putting even on themselves.
Yeah, I wonder if games are getting too large. You know, I would imagine Starfield's going to be a 200-hour game or something. Yeah, I mean, you know, and I've never really been that excited for Starfield because even though it looks cool, I just know that it's going to be way too big for me to be able to really get into it. So
I'm excited for it because I like those kind of games.
I get it. It's just like, to me, and I've expressed this on the show before, I don't like these games getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. I would rather them get a little bit smaller and focus on interesting new things like character interactions or gameplay systems or, you know, give me a game that finally like lets me, you know, actually explore every little building that I'm in like I would be able to in real life rather than we've got this giant city, but 90% of the buildings are closed and they're just facades for you to look at, right?
Yeah, just make your game good enough that I can just do co-op Red Dead 2 instead of your shitty Red Dead Online.
But anyway, I don't want to go too much farther down this road. I do worry about Xbox. I think this looks real bad for them. I hope they've got something else this fall. But honestly, dude, like this just looks rough for them. If they end up in a situation where we're getting into 2023 and we haven't had a game since Halo Infinite.
But at what point do they turn around and maybe rush something else and then it's bad?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, look, dude, we've got games like Hellblade 2. Hellblade 2 was announced in 2018 or something, and we still haven't seen that game.
But didn't we
State of Decay 3 is another one where they announced it forever ago. I agree with you, and I've been
looking for that one.
And we still haven't seen. So, like, those are games that they've announced. Sure, they didn't give a release date on it, but, like, how long have they been? So I feel like they're just games that have been delayed, even though we don't realize they've been delayed because they never did actually commit to a date.
Weren't we just recently talking about this with Sony, though, about how they've had some major delays and they have this huge void as well where they just don't have... Because, again, everybody's freaking games are being delayed.
Yeah, they potentially have a void. We don't know if God of War is really going to happen in 2022. Yeah. And if it doesn't, they may not have another game in 2022. But Sony did release Gran Turismo 7 and was it Gran Turismo 7 or Gran Turismo 6? I can't even remember now. They just released a Gran Turismo game and Horizon Zero Dawn, two flagship games this year. So if they don't get anything else out, at least Sony have gotten two flagship franchises out this year. We've got nothing from Xbox yet. And so that's really my point here, in that this doesn't look good for Xbox. Now, let's hold our breath for another month. June 12th, they've got a showcase. We'll find out more then. We'll save our doom and gloom for then, but that's just, you know, I hope it's not doom and gloom. Let me put it that way. I'm hoping that they assuage any fears by then.
We started the show off and I was like, oh, I like your shirt. You know, screw you and your shirt and talking negative about Xbox. You know what I mean? You can take that PlayStation shirt off.
I suppose my rant here against Xbox, I probably should have chosen different attire. Fortunately, we're not a video show.
You came prepped to just dunk all over Xbox.
I will always be honest with the listenership. They know that if I praise something...
I'll lie to them.
No, they'll know.
I will lie to every last one of you people.
They'll know if I praise something, it's genuine. Because I will talk something down if it's not worth praising. That's my take on it, at least. I hope I'm right. Let me know if I'm wrong. All right, let's get into what we're playing. Jason, I've talked a lot. Why don't you go first?
I've only played The Division. I've played a shitload of The Division 2. So the good news is last week when I was speaking about The Division, I spoke highly of The Division. I really am liking it. But one of the negatives that I said was, for those who had stayed with The Division the whole time, they had been rewatching the season passes. And so we were on season 8, and they only had season 1 through 6 done. And they had expected to have new content come out, and they hadn't finished it. So they rewatched. Season 7 was a rewatch of season 1. And season 8 was a rewatch of season 2, right?
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, fine on me, but it sucks for those people, right?
Right, right.
Season 9 came out today. And it's a title update, 15 for them, ton of new content, new stuff, changed, a lot of good additions. Like, now there's expertise. And so you level individual pieces. Via just using that item, leveling up shotguns or leveling up, a specific brand of backpack or, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? You can do that by just using that item and playing with it, or by donating duplicates of that item instead of breaking it down for its materials, or by just donating raw materials. Right. There's a multitude of different ways you can do it, but it's just another way of increasing your base stats in game with a specific thing on top of the watch that I was telling you they already have, where you're leveling and putting in points into a talent tree on your watch. Right.
Okay.
So there's that. And then they added just a ton of new, missions and, some additional story, some really cool cutscenes. To go with that story. And the story, it's a lot like with Destiny 2, where the story takes place over the season and they release, parts of it as the season goes.
Right.
And the way that the Division does that is there's this big bad, there's a bad guy and he always has four henchmen, essentially. And so throughout the season, they will release quests and missions that you have to do to unlock the location of one of the minions. And then you go into, a big event to find and hunt down that, his agent that's, working for him, one of his horsemen.
Right.
And after you've taken them down, you get some additional information or whatever. And then, the next one that will release will be another one of the horsemen. And you do that throughout the whole season. And then at the very end is the big bad.
Right. That's
really cool. Each one of those have rewards that are, involved with taking them out, and specific content. They have brand new gear. So think again, there's exotics in Destiny. There's exotics in The Division.
Right.
And
I knew
they drop a new exotic with every season. So there's a new exotic that you get through all this. They also have a, just like how you have Xur, in the division. So in, right. or sorry, in Destiny in the division, you have Cassie, who is shows up every week with new gear and stuff, but, she doesn't sell a guaranteed exotic like what Xur does. Okay. And it's not like just there where you go find her. You have to like do a mission. You have to like find this guy who can spawn in 31 different locations on the map. And literally it's every single time you log in, it's a different different place. It's not like there's a website that just says, here's where he is. You have to like go to these locations and find him. And then he gives you a mission that you have to complete. And if you complete it, then you can see where she is until you
log
off.
That's kind of annoying, actually. I don't think I like that.
I don't love that portion of it, but it's like you earn getting to her.
It'd be one thing if it was like 5 or 6 locations that you check out, but 31.
31. So, I mean, here's the thing. There's 31 possible locations. People have figured out, like, there's cheeses. And essentially the cheese is you log in. There's like 4 spots that are like really easy to get to. And you check those 4 spots and it takes you like, I mean, no time at all. I mean, you can do it in like 30 seconds, right? You check those 4 spots and if he's not there, you log out and log back in.
Yeah.
You check those 4 spots, you log out, you log back in. So people find him pretty quick that way.
The fact that you, that people I don't even know what I'm trying to say.
I know what you're trying to say.
The fact that people are doing that to get around resort. Thank you. Yeah. It shows that it's a bad concept. Like you shouldn't want to close your game and restart.
I don't love that portion of it. But anyway, so I'm pumped because that started today. So I've not gotten to actually jump in and play that. I've watched a couple of videos about it. So, I mean, I know of it, but I'm pretty pumped about it. So last night I did my first. So there's this building. Think of it like a skyscraper. And the building's called the Summit. Right. It's 100 floors. And you start on floor 1 and you just like go, you know, up the floors. Right. And you can set the difficulty. And then there's these directives. So the directives are like, you know, like you're. They're multipliers for experience and quality of gear, but they make it harder. You know, stuff like, you know, if one of your skills is on cooldown, they're both on cooldown. You don't regenerate armor, or the enemy gets special types of ammo, et cetera, et cetera. There's all these like difficulty multipliers.
Right.
So you can activate those. And you know, I turn on these directives and go into that, and you just like farm out gear as you go up the levels of this skyscraper. And like every 3 levels you get like a checkpoint, so you can like log out and log back in and finish it and do it over and over.
Okay.
And you can set your loot specification, your allocation, to whatever you want in that. So whereas before I was saying you have open map and you can go do things, and this mission will give you shotguns today, and so you're just going to farm shotguns. Whereas the tower, you can specifically choose what you want while you farm it. So last night I officially am geared enough now where I did my first, where I found out I can go into it and solo the legendary difficulty with like no problem with ease. So I'm pretty pumped about that. So now I can just go do the like highest quality, you know, like raid quality by myself and just like farm out like really high quality gear out of it. So I'm pretty pumped about that. So
very cool.
I'm gonna start doing more and more of that. So anyway, I'm enjoying the division.
I think that's a really neat concept, having like a skyscraper that you literally go through the floors. I like that concept. That's pretty cool.
And it's different. Like sometimes you take the elevator up the floor. Sometimes you take the stairs. Sometimes there's a rope you have to climb. Sometimes there's a hole in the floor above and a box that you climb on and like jump up into the, like, I don't know. It's, and every floor is different. Like some floors look like they're all plywood and they're being like remodeled. And some floors are like office space, and some floors are, you know what I mean? Like, every floor is different and has different mobs on it. And some of them are like just drones that are attacking you, or et cetera.
Right.
Some of them are rogue agents, which are crazy tough. I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah. Well, that's a really cool concept. All right. So speaking of live service games that we're addicted to, I've been playing a bunch of Destiny 2 this week. Finally finished out my season pass and got all the rewards for this season. So this year of Destiny, we've seasoned 16, 17, 18, and 19. And so this is season 16. This is the first season of this year of Destiny. And that season is actually about to end. So I think there's like a week and a half left. I think it was 2 weeks at the reset this past Tuesday. So there's about a week and a half left in this season. So we're about to get our next season of content in Destiny 2 as well. Which is exciting. So my main goal was just to finish out the season pass and make sure I got all the gear out of it. And I got that done. I'm pretty high level now. Not like super high level, but I'd be high enough to actually do the raid. So I really need to find a group of people to go do the raid with me.
Yeah, I get that. We're at that same point in Division where we're raid ready. That's kind of our next thing to do.
Right. So that's Destiny for me. Nothing new to report there. A little side game that I've been playing with my girls, and I hadn't really talked about it on the show, but since we just finished it this past weekend, I'll go ahead and talk about it for a brief moment here. But that's Sackboy. So Sackboy, A Big Adventure, was a launch title with the PS5. I bought it on one of the Black Friday sales last November, and I played it with my girls. It's really cool because you can have up to 4-player local co-op. So we were able to play it together. What would I call it? Like a 2.5D platformer similar to...
is it like Unravel?
No, Unravel's 2D. It's in one plane. This one can kind of come in and out of planes a little bit. So it's much more like Super Mario 3D World or whatever that one was called on the Wii U that they redid for the Switch. It is a very accomplished and capable platformer. It's not Mario level. Very few things are Mario level.
It's not the budget of Mario either.
No, it's not. I would say it's just a tier right below Mario. I think Sumo should have gotten a lot more credit for this. This game should have gotten a lot more attention. I hope PlayStation realizes they have something on their hands here and maybe should do more with this later on down the road, especially it being very kid-friendly. But I actually really enjoyed this game. I thought it was really quality. I play a lot of these platformers. I'm a big Mario fan. I'm a big platformer fan. And I would put this right up, you know, in the top third of platformers I've played. I really enjoyed it. It's got some unique ideas with some of its levels. It's very cute, you know, which if you're going for kids, you know, that's a good quality.
So
it's got
a lot of I just looked it up and I didn't know what you were talking about, but as soon as I see the cover art, I'm like, oh yeah, I know what this is. Isn't this guy from like another series, Little Big Planet or something?
Yeah, Little Big Planet. This is the spiritual successor to Little Big Planet. So Instead of making Little Big Planet 4, they just made Sackboy.
Cool.
Anyway, as I was saying, it's got a lot of customizability with your character in terms of their clothes and their gear and whatever that they're wearing, which kids love, by the way. Like if you,
yeah, for sure.
I know you have kids, but those out there that don't have kids, you have to understand kids love customizing their character. You give them lots of cool outfits and allow them to interchange that.
It's not just kids. You know how long people spend making their character on like
it's true.
Really good character developments. Like people spend literally create, like I know there's people who will spend 8 hours in the customer character creation of like a Dark Souls, not Dark Souls, but the one that just came out, Elden Ring, was one of the ones that people spent crazy amounts of time creating their character.
Yeah, it's true. People do love character creation tools. So I mean, this isn't really character creation. It's more like customizing like different outfits and stuff, but it's the same idea. And they love that. So I don't know. It's quite good. It gets actually fairly difficult towards the end. The last world was really hard because my girls kept dying and you only have a set number of lives, so it was like I basically had to get through the level without dying if we were going to beat the level. And it got quite challenging towards the end. So definitely, like, I'm not kidding, like people out there that like platformers like Super Mario like the Mario platformers, and you have a PS5 and you see this thing on sale for $15-$20, think about giving it a shot. This game is much better than I thought it had any right to be when I first saw it announced at PS5 launch. So anyway, I finished that game with him. That one's done. And so then the other thing I've been doing a lot of is playing Ghostwire Tokyo. I finished Chapter 2 over the weekend. So I'd say I'm getting close to about halfway through the game. I've opened up quite a bit of the Tokyo map. It's a lot of fun to explore. So last week, I didn't really give like a good description of what the moment-to-moment is. So one of the things that's really cool about this game is that even though it's an open world, it doesn't give you all of its towers, in quotes, up front, right? So in Assassin's Creed game, you climb the tower, you sink the tower, you open up an area and you can see what's in the area and all these icons pop up on your map and you just start exploring them, right? It doesn't do that. It has these things called Tori gates, but they are locked off to you based on story progression. So you'll go to an icon, you'll do something in the story, maybe one or two Tori gates will open up. You can go to them. You can kind of explore the world as you're going to them, do the Tori gate, and it opens up kind of a new space, and you kind of get to the next icon, and there's another Tori gate, and you kind of go one at a time. So it's kind of always leading you in a direction. It doesn't just let you just kind of blah all over the open world wherever you want to go. It kind of keeps you going down the path. It kind of keeps you on the story.
I like that.
And I do. I really like that. It keeps me a little bit focused as someone who's kind of OCD and wants to collect everything. So anyway, you get your story icon. You know that you're kind of going to this next Tori gate. Along the way, you're seeing these spirits that you can collect. You collect them into your little it's like a paper like figure thing that you hold up and you collect it into it. And after you collect it enough, you go to one of the payphones and you deposit them and you get XP and coin from collecting these spirits and rescuing them, depositing them at the payphone. As you're going along, there's also other little collectibles. You can pray at these Jizu statues, which increase your ammo capacity essentially in your for your wind, water, and fire elements. You can find these, they're called Magatama, and for every 3 that you get, you can unlock new paths in your skill tree. So like you open up your skill tree, you can dump XP into your skill trees, but eventually you hit a block and you have to dump Magatama into the, to the block to open up the rest of that skill tree. And so that it kind of gives you gives you ways of like thinking about how you're building up your character and how you're playing the character and what you're doing, which is really cool. So you're looking for those collectibles. And then the enemies that you face, the world is not fully populated with enemies. They're not everywhere, but they are enemies out there. Yeah. And those are the visitors. And the combat loop is actually pretty fun. So at first I thought that they were going to match the elements with the different visitors. And so like certain elements might be better against other, but really it's effectively a first person shooter in that your wind element is your assault rifle. Your water element is your shotgun and your fire element is your bazooka. That's effectively what it is. And that's how the game, runs. And then as you shoot the visitors, they start disintegrating and eventually you can pull the core out of them and they, die and they leave behind, you know, little crystals that you pick up, which replenish your ammo capacity, effectively. So like you might have 30 shots of your wind power. And when you kill somebody, you pick up some of those green crystals and you get more, ammo in your wind power. And it's a lot of fun. I mean, it works really well. I think that it controls pretty well. It's kind of fun to dance around with the different elements that you have, and how you attack different enemies. There's also a block that you can do. Like if they get too close in your face, you can block them and they back off and you can shoot them some more.
But
that's sort of the main drive. You're just kind of going to your next story point, and along the way, you're finding these collectibles, collecting the spirits, depositing them in the payphone, leveling up your character, kind of exploring the world around you. There's also these little side missions, but again, great thing is that it'll only pop up like 2 or 3 at a time. You're not just going to get 50 fucking side missions on the map at one time and that you can pick all of them up.
Yeah.
Like, no, it like sparses them out slowly or pieces them out slowly. as you progress through the story and progress across the city of Tokyo, or the district of Shibuya, in the city of Tokyo. And the story is kind of campy. It's kind of Japanese, but it's very much like in front of you, what you see is what you get. And that's kind of nice coming out of stuff like Horizon that had a lot of intricacies and depths to it, that interlacing ideas and where this person's coming from and tying into the last game and things like that. So it's pretty nice to have something that's just kind of in front of you from a story perspective. Yeah, I'm having a lot of fun with it. It's a really neat game. Again, something that that's way better than I felt like it had any right to be when I first saw it announced.
Yeah, well, I mean, here's what I'll say. Ghostwire Tokyo looks cool as shit.
It definitely
is very, very unique. And man, it just looks really freaking cool.
Yeah, visually it is, as you said, it's unique, and it's visually appealing to be in that world and to see what's happening and the enemies in front of you. And some of them are kind of creepy, but like, I've never once been like scared by the game. So like, if you think it's a horror game or whatever, like Resident Evil 8 was way fucking scarier than this thing.
Yeah.
And I didn't even think that was too much. So.
And then just because you mentioned it a couple times, I'll just give a shout out, to, Carrie, who is a colleague of mine. She just told me this morning, actually, that she just finished Forbidden West as well. And she's like, she said that she loved it and like that it was so good. And she can't wait. She didn't give any spoilers other than apparently there's a cliffhanger, because she was like, I can't wait for, you know, part three, you know.
So yeah, Forbidden West ends. It's very clearly the middle part of a trilogy.
Yeah, yeah. Like, so...
deadpan.
She was like, oh, now I gotta wait like 3 to 4 years.
Oh yeah, for sure, at least 4 years. Definitely the middle part of a trilogy for Ben West. All right, well, that's all I've got for games I'm playing, so let's get on into the show. And that's the show. Yeah, no, I almost wish we've got so much to go here.
We're gonna have to pick up the pace.
But yeah, let's go ahead and get into the topic of the show. And, again, I didn't even think about this when I put the show together, but man, my shirt is really,
I'm telling you,
it feels really targeted. But the topic of the show is the Xbox DRM issues. If you haven't been online,
and you just got done telling everyone that you wouldn't lie to them. You lying son of a, you bought that shirt today. I know it. You did.
No,
you wrote these notes and you went and bought that shirt.
Not true. I've worn the shirt on the show before.
Lies.
I'm not lying. I'm sitting, actually. Anyway, Xbox.
That was so good.
Xbox is DRM issues. I am such a dad. It's been all the talk this past week. If you haven't been paying attention, I don't know where you've been. Last Friday, Xbox's cloud servers and their store, all that stuff went down, and it brought this back to light that if you don't have a way to check in with Xbox servers, there are a bunch of games you just cannot launch, whether you own a physical copy or you own it digitally, like you just cannot launch it. So I'm going to read a little bit here and then we can talk about it some. So Xbox's online DRM policy has been criticized again after server outages left some console owners unable to launch their purchased games for a fourth day. This was over across the whole weekend. On Friday, May 6th, Xbox's support team first confirmed that its servers were experiencing a major outage after users complained that they were unable to purchase or launch games or start cloud gaming sessions. On Saturday, the support team claimed it had resolved the issue, only for it to state several hours later that the issue had returned. In total, the support team claimed to have fixed the problem twice this weekend, only for it to seemingly return later.
That's embarrassing.
That is quite embarrassing. Now, I will say for my part, it only really affected me Friday. I was totally locked out Friday night, couldn't play at all. But once Saturday rolled around, I was not affected again, even though I saw this come back up. I personally was not affected again. I'm mainly playing, my biggest problem though is I mainly play Destiny, Rocket League, and Halo, which are all definitely online games on Xbox. So I'm not even really playing a whole lot of first or single player stuff. For those of you that don't know, what is DRM? DRM stands for Digital Rights Management. Whenever you purchase some form of digital media, you usually aren't actually buying the content. Rather, you are buying a license to consume that content on a specific platform. For example, Steam is a DRM platform. Whenever you buy a game on Steam, a license to download and play that game is added to your account, and you can take advantage of that license whenever you want. Consoles are no different. The PlayStation Store and Microsoft Store, formerly Xbox Marketplace, are also DRM platforms. How do they differ, though? And this is something that I actually had a really hard time trying to figure out. I probably spent a good 45 minutes researching this while writing the show, trying to figure out how does PlayStation and Microsoft stores differ from the DRM perspective. And what I came to find is that a lot of Xbox's issues are tied to actual good consumer practices in the smart delivery system and the Xbox Game Pass. So wherein PlayStation Store, they don't have those sort of systems in place. It's really very much like a you buy a digital game and then that's kind of it. There's no branching out from that point. Right. So they actually store or cache your license agreement on your local console. So as long as your PS5 is set as your home console, that cache is localized and you can go offline for seemingly indefinite period of time. I couldn't find anything official from PlayStation, but I found anecdotal evidence saying that, you know, people's consoles had been unplugged from the internet for 4 to 6 months and had not had any issues. And that's largely because they cache it there. Now, Xbox can't do that because if they did, people could literally go
a month, they get whatever you want and then unplug.
Yeah, they'd go get a $1 Xbox Game Pass subscription, download like every game they wanted, and then just unplug their console from the internet, and that would be it. And then similarly with the smart delivery stuff, how it like pings your account to say, oh yeah, you owned this game here previously, so we're just going to give you the new gen version for free without charging you or anything. Obviously, PlayStation are not doing that. They're charging you for upgrades and then cashing that license on your local console. So I guess it's a which hand do you prefer, I guess, is kind of really what it comes down to.
But anyway, I see though what PlayStation evolves to with that when they go to their service.
Yeah, when they start going to their service and their drive towards live service games, etc., things like that, for sure. Now, I will say on the Xbox side, if you have set your console, if you've set it to you it being your home console, just the same on PlayStation, there are many games, even Game Pass games, that you can play for up to, it seems like somewhere in the region of around a month, around 30 days without it needing to check back in. But eventually it's going to want to check back in. Now, there are certain games, and this is publisher driven, this is not platform driven, that just are online only. For example, one of the games that got into a lot of hot water was Gran Turismo 7 on the PlayStation side. Even though it has a large single player portion, it is online only. So if you're off the internet, you cannot play Gran Turismo 7, period, because that game requires you to be connected online in order to play it.
Marvel's Avengers is another one that you literally cannot buy that game. And because I dealt with this, so my little brother who has Down syndrome, we always buy him games and he plays a lot of games, whatever, but he doesn't really need to be online, doesn't play anything online. We don't have online for him, you know, and he has a PlayStation 4. We didn't buy him Avengers for a really long time because, you know, we always check the back of the box on stuff or whatever to see if it requires online. And if it does, then he can't play it. Right. So, we finally, at some point, he also has an Xbox. And at one point I finally got him Game Pass as well. And so since he has Game Pass, then we got him hooked up and this and that. And so, then it's on, the Game Pass or whatever. And I don't know. He plays it that way, but yeah, you're right. There's some games that you just can't do anything with.
Yeah. So anyway, I kind of talked a lot. I laid out a lot of what's here. What is your reaction to all of this? Do you think that this is a Microsoft fault? Do you think that they should do something better in this regard? Or do you think that this is just a natural byproduct of going to digital trend, you know, the digital trends, going to these digital services, mm-hmm. and, you know, as I laid out, you know, Game Pass and smart delivery and things like that.
I mean, ultimately, you know, let's look at, you know, the number of days their service is live versus the number of days that they've had issues and how much good it does and how, you know, we are all extremely, you know, big supporters of Game Pass and how, you know, everything it does. It's not like industry breaking, you know, they had probably some equipment failure. You know, you just never know, possibly a DDoS attack or something like, I mean, even PlayStation is, you know, not immune to the DDoS attacks that seem to always happen around console releases and around new game releases, around Christmas, et cetera, et cetera. Like, you know, so these things happen regardless of this whole DRM thing.
Right.
You know, game servers go down. Like, this happens. You know, look, you can't watch Netflix without the internet either. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So, yeah. I don't know. I don't think it's that big a deal. I think it is just something that is literally for this format to work and for us to get the benefits that we get from Game Pass. This is something that is just an absolute must. And it just sucks we had a bad weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it would be nice if they could figure out a way to distinguish between games you've, like, if they could figure out a different way in the back end of the service to distinguish between something that you're purchasing through Game Pass and downloading versus something you're literally paying money for. And so at least if they could distinguish that
they could cash
those local license agreements for games that you have physically paid money for.
Sure.
So then at least maybe internet goes down, really all that's affected is your Game Pass games or something like that.
Yeah. That part I get, and I am supportive and agree that if you pay for it, you should get a not necessarily a digital key, you should get a physical, you know, or onboard key. I agree with that.
I think that would really help assuage some of this. Mm-hmm. I will say that you know, I think one of the key things that people have to realize, and I think that people let this go by them a little too often, when you buy a digital game, you are not buying anything that you now physically own. And that is something that we've really kind of reiterate. I said it already once, but I want to reiterate again. All you are buying is a key, or a right to access, that game. You're not actually buying the game itself anymore with these digital games. So, I mean, honestly, even with physical games, because you have to install them on the console, I mean, really, you own a disc, but that's kind of it. You don't really own the game fully right there on that disc anymore because they all have to be installed. But it is a step further with digital games. And I think people really need to remember that as part of embracing the convenience of digital media, you know, you're not buying games anymore. You're buying access rights is what you're doing. I tend to agree with you that, you know, I don't think that Microsoft should be, I think people are really going overboard. It seems that people really have held on to the whole Xbox One launch issues back in 2013 with DRM. Yeah. It seems like people really have held on to that, and they hold Microsoft and Xbox in a different light than they hold the other platforms. You know, when internet goes down on Sony platforms, you are also going to be restricted from buying and playing certain games. That is a fact. Definitely it's better in some regards for if the game allows the license agreement to be cashed, the console will support that.
Yeah.
But it is a fact that you can get hit with these outages as well on PlayStation. And I have been, I have run into instances where I went to try to play single player games on my PS5 recently and couldn't. So people definitely need to kind of realize that this is not something that is strictly an Xbox issue. DRM itself exists on all of these platforms, and there are obviously consequences. There are pluses and minuses with it that we have to kind of either accept or not accept. And if you don't accept it, then you got to look at, you know, I don't even know what you look at anymore. I mean, digital media is the future, period. We have to accept that. One little PSA that I did read in all of my research, apparently sometimes if your console is still connected to the internet and has internet access, but there's a server issue on Xbox's side, the game will still try to ping the server and then say, well, I'm not getting a response, so therefore I'm questioning whether you own the console. And so people found that if they just disconnected from the internet and went into offline mode, that they would be able to launch those games. So just sort of a PSA that I found as I was researching this stuff to kind of consider and remind yourself the next time if this happens again. All right. Anything else you want to say on DRM issues?
Nah.
I think we covered it well. All right. Let's jump into the not so speedy news speed run. Here we go. Number one, Ubisoft CEO Yves Guillemot has commented on recent speculation that the company could be the subject of a takeover bid. This comes after reports last month that the company behind the Rainbow Six and Far Cry series was attracting takeover interest from several private equity firms, including Blackstone Inc., which, oh my freaking, like, please, God, no, not this, and KKR and company, which I've never really heard of KKR, but Blackstone is a fucked up place. We don't want them involved in the game industry. And then last week, Ubisoft's founding Guillemot family was also considering teaming up with other undisclosed private equity firms to acquire the company. So maybe the Guillemot family itself are trying to team up to stay involved with Ubisoft. So Yves Guillemot responded to this. He said, quote, "There has been a lot of talk around consolidation in the industry and in Ubisoft in particular. Our overall position is clear and well known. As we said last February, we have everything we need to remain independent. We have the talent, the industrial and financial scale, and a large portfolio of powerful IPs to create massive value in the coming years. It has provided us with a plan to build strategic partnerships with the biggest players in entertainment and tech. The current speculation is putting in plain sight the real appeal and value of our assets and our value creation potential. As mentioned before, as a publicly listed company, it is best practice for our board to review any offer in the interest of all shareholders and our great teams." End quote.
Okay, Jason, so
what do you think?
Here's my thoughts. We have been very vocal on this show for a while now that Ubisoft may be the next, you know, gobble up, right? I also believe that Ubisoft has been very active in trying to be the next gobble up, even if they are not full on publicly saying it. I think they have been, you know, like, look, in a lot of things, there's leaks, right? Leaks happen for a reason. And I think they are leaking some of these things because they want it to be out there that, hey, someone's looking to buy us. If you are looking to buy us, you better bid higher than them because they did it. And so, you know, to kind of create value, right? There is absolutely zero reason why Ubisoft should ever even respond or make any kind of a statement or talk about this. There's no reason for them to come out and talk about this other than they want to make again another headline to come up to be like, hey, look how valuable we are. We can stay independent and we're strong on our own and we do this and that. Da, da, da. And they're saying all these things. Oh, but then they follow that sentence back up with, hey, it's best practice though for us to review. So we're not saying not to send us an offer. Because, you know, if you send it, we definitely should review it. This is such a ridiculous release and statement. This whole thing screams, please come buy us. Please, please, oh, please, oh, please, oh, please. And, oh, and by the way, but while I'm begging for it, because we've been making all these hints and secret leaks and stuff for like a year now, I'm also going to then try to increase my value so that you spend lots for me. I'm a big fan of a lot of stuff Ubisoft does. Okay. I'm currently playing a Ubisoft game right now that I'm really happy with. But I just don't, I just believe that they have been trying to get bought for a while now.
Yeah. And my personal take is, like, I kind of just really hope that it doesn't happen. I don't really see anybody out there right now that I'd like to see buy Ubisoft. Just because, like, what are the options? I mean, Blackstone Inc., like, fuck that, man. What a shady place. This just,
I mean, you just never know. Someone like an Epic could swing in and grab them, right? But I doubt it.
Yeah, maybe.
You just never know.
You could see someone like Amazon trying to come in here.
Oh, hey, that's not a bad idea, because Amazon has definitely struggled on some things, right?
Yeah, but I mean, that scares me too.
Just like with Microsoft, it's not like Amazon doesn't have the freaking money.
Right? Yeah, exactly. You know, it doesn't seem like PlayStation are sniffing at this one. They seem,
I don't think so either. And I don't think Xbox is either.
I don't think Xbox can right now.
Well, it doesn't make a lot of sense for Xbox, because a lot of the Ubisoft games are like direct competitors for Activision games. Like, it's a lot of them.
Activision or Bethesda games, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, that's true too. So I just don't think it makes sense for Microsoft. So probably the only like biggies on this would be, like you said, Amazon or Epic.
Yeah, or as we mentioned, some other unknown outside entity. Sure.
I can't think of it at the second. What's the one that just did a gobble last week that owned like a gajillion?
Embracer Group. The Embracer Group. Yeah. I mean, I'd almost be fine with them picking up Ubisoft at this point over some of these other entities.
I feel that the Embracer Group is not the type to come in and like set a standard by, because it very much feels like Ubisoft wants to be bought, but they want to be bought at like a Activision crazy, like over with their value type of price point. Like they want to be set at like a statement buy, not a, like where Embracer did the last little thing where they bought, a portion of the Square Enix, but we all kind of feel like that's kind of low. I just don't think Ubisoft is not going to settle. I think they are trying to sell, but at really freaking high value.
Yeah, they want to get in the tens of billions of dollars for this company. Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, speaking of Ubisoft, they have provided an update on its product release slate, including several premium titles. In its full-year earnings report published on Wednesday, the company said that Avatar Frontiers of Pandora, Mario plus Rabbids Sparks of Hope, and Skull and Bones are on track to release during its current fiscal year ending on March 31st, 2023. Speaking on the company's earnings call, Chief Corporate Finance Officer Frederic Duguet, I don't know how to say his name, narrowed the release windows for the three games to the second half of the fiscal year, meaning they won't be released before October 1, 2022.
Basically, this just goes back to my start from the very, very beginning of what you talked about. Here it is. Hey, fiscal earnings, 31st. Let's get it in real quick to raise our value. Hey, we have these major titles that are going to release. Now, they're not going to be released early. They're going to release like right before the fiscal. This is another pressure thing. It's another announcement to help their value. Yeah. We'll see how many of these actually release before March 31st.
Now, to be fair, though, at an earnings call, this is not like announcing to the gamer pub. I mean, gamers have picked up on this now. We all go and look at these earnings calls to find out what's coming up.
Exactly, earnings call. This is all about their, this isn't announcement for gamers. This is announcement for shareholders and so that's why they're announcing these things, because they want their value to go up. Not necessarily
owe that to their shareholders. They have to give something like that.
Oh, they do. I get that.
They can't literally show up at the shareholders meeting and be like,
nothing.
We have no idea what could happen.
Right.
They would be like, all right, well, fine. I'm fucking selling this shit. Yeah. You know, like they can't do that. They have to come up with a plan as a business, as a publicly traded business. Mm-hmm. They have to have a plan, which has to involve a set number of games.
Right.
Because that is their product. That's the product they put out.
Right.
So they have to have something.
Right.
But I agree with you that, you know, it's risky, right? Yep. It is putting a, we need you to get out before this date, otherwise right. we lose profit
right.
type of badge right. on your game.
Right.
For sure. Based on some other quotes from Yves Guillemot, I suspect that we'll see Skull and Bones as their sort of flagship fall title.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to think that that game is already in alpha beta and could, or alpha preview and could be in a beta preview state by the summer. Mario plus Rabbids has been being worked on for a while too. So I have a feeling that game is probably pretty strong, for this fall or maybe early next year. And then Avatar, right? We know that movie is coming out in right. December.
I was going to say, you'd think it would release alongside it at minimum with that.
I think this is the game. The Avatar game is the one that's their March release.
Right.
I think Avatar is probably going to come out somewhere in the second or third week of March, 2023.
So not alongside, sort of, you think it's quite a bit after.
I think it's a couple months afterwards because it's like, hey, Avatar, you went and saw the movie. It was awesome, right? Here's our game.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think they want to put that game in front of it. They want to get all of that from the movie and that attention and that momentum and then come the game.
Okay.
So that's my guess.
Yeah. And that probably makes a lot more sense too, because again, there could be stuff from the movie that's in here. And the movie may be like, yeah, you cannot freaking release the game before we release our damn movie.
Yeah, for sure. Which, by the way, that trailer looks awesome. And I said it time and time again on the show. I am a Avatar fan, and I'm not ashamed to admit it. And I'm excited for this movie.
Yeah.
Right. And this game, actually. So, all right. Are we anything else, or are we ready to move on? All right, number three. I don't give Nintendo a lot of love, so we're going to give Nintendo a ton of love on this episode. Nintendo president Shuntaro Furukawa has said that the company's eventual transition away from Nintendo Switch to its next hardware platform is a, quote, major concern for the company. Furukawa said that the company planned to alleviate the risks of resetting its 100 million-plus user base by building a, quote, long-term relationship, end quote, with its users, partly via Nintendo accounts and by using its IP outside of gaming. A little bit of history here. Nintendo followed up its big successes such as Wii, which sold over 100 million units, and the DS, which sold over 150 million units, with significantly less popular successors. The Wii U sold only 13.5 million units,
yikes,
and the 3DS managed 75 million units, which is not bad, but is literally less than half of the DS sales. Furukawa said the company was mindful of these experiences. Quote, however, the question of whether we will be able to just as smoothly transition from the Nintendo Switch to the next generation of hardware is a major concern for us. Based on our experiences with the Wii, Nintendo DS, and other hardware, it is very clear that one of the major obstacles is how to easily transition from one hardware to the next. To help alleviate this risk, we're focusing on building long-term relationships with our customers. While we will continue launching new software on the Nintendo Switch, we will also provide services that use Nintendo accounts and other IP outside of gaming software. We intend for this to help build a lasting impact with our customers, end quote. I thought this was really interesting. This shows an awareness that we haven't seen a lot from Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're starting to eye the reality that they need to think about backwards compatibility, bringing software forward with their consoles, right, not alienating things on individual consoles,
mm-hmm,
as they have done in the past, mm-hmm, particularly with the Wii and the Wii U.
Yep.
So yeah, I wanted to give them a shout out and say that this is positive sounding.
Yep.
We need to see what the execution is, but this is very positive sounding.
I mean, look, it makes, I agree. The only little time, it's not even a negative because it's positive for gamers. It's just they're seeing the negative side of it, like the business side of it, right? Which is they're very, very hyper aware that their last console before the Switch was an absolute, complete, and total flop, which was the Wii U. When you go from selling a Wii, which was massive and a huge hit and did 101 units. And we don't have the exact number here right now, but we're currently on the Switch, which is over 100, right? Like, what is...
I do actually have the exact number.
What is it?
Lifetime sales for the Switch right now is 107.6 million.
Yeah. So basically, all right, we grabbed all those users again from the original Wii. Oh, and then we released the Wii U. 13 million. Colossal failure, flop, right?
Mm-hmm.
That had major, major implications on Nintendo. And they also very, very hyper aware. Now, that's good for gamers. It's good for us. But they are hyper aware of, hey, what we don't want to happen is we have our next cycle. We release a product and it fails. Because then we're out for, you know, 5 years, 6 years, 7 years where we don't exist in the market, right?
Yeah.
Because that's what it was. It was 5 years of the Wii U until we came out with the Switch. So there's a self-preservation in that too. Like, we need to make sure, you know, we keep all these users and don't lose them. And so I
think the only way to do that is to provide value to those users and reasons to stay for those users. So that should be a good sign for
And like Nintendo says, it's a good thing for us. I'm just saying that they're definitely self-aware in that they don't want to possibly miss, because it could be a big miss. I mean, big.
Yeah. I mean, I remember in the lead up to the Nintendo Switch, people were legitimately saying, was all this talk about, like, well, if the Switch fails, then Nintendo should just sell its IP to PlayStation and Xbox.
Oh, I remember become a third party going publisher. To buy Nintendo. I remember that was huge. Like, Disney would take all their IP and make movies. And I remember that Disney, like, that was the big rumor bill. Disney's going to buy Nintendo.
I mean, the Wii U was legitimately a Sega Dreamcast level failure, and Sega Dreamcast killed Sega as a console manufacturer. Everyone thought that that's what was going to happen to Nintendo, and they ended up, I mean, flipping the script.
Well, completely. The only thing that really saved them, and again, it wasn't as successful as the DS, right? But the only thing that saved them was the 3DS. At least they had 75 million. That if they didn't have that at all, like if this, let's say this was PlayStation. If PlayStation 4 came out and only did 13 million units total, it would have that Sony would go under.
Right.
You know,
you're absolutely right.
So at least Nintendo had a secondary, you know, like product that held them.
It's very true. Very true. All right. Ready to move on, because we got more Nintendo news, but
I was going to say was, actually it fits better for the next thing. So let's do that.
All right, so moving on. Meanwhile, Nintendo's next console is at least 2 years away, a senior industry analyst has forecast. Piers Harding Rolls of Ampere Analysis provided his predictions following Nintendo's latest financial results on Tuesdays. Which, if you are interested in those figures, here's what they were. Nintendo announced Switch hardware sales of 23.06 million for its 2022 fiscal year, bringing lifetime sales to 107.6 million consoles sold. The figure brings the company closer to beating PS2's record of 155 million. That's the highest selling console of all time. But it still represents a 20% decline on the previous year, when Switch sales peaked at 28.83 million units for the 2021 fiscal year. Around 25% of the Switch's sales were the new OLED unit, Nintendo said, while the standard console made up 58.7% of the sales. The company says it expects to ship 21 million consoles before the end of the current fiscal year in March of 2023, which represents a 9.8% decline from the previous year and a 37% decline from fiscal year 2020. That obviously was the year of the pandemic and Animal Crossing and the explosion of the Switch popularity. Yeah. So it's no surprise that it's a sharp decline there. So moving back to Ampere, he said, quote, moving back to Piers Harding Rolls, he said, quote, Ampere is currently forecasting a next-gen Nintendo device to release in 2024. By the end of that year, Switch is predicted to have sold through 146 million units, meaning it still has the potential to become the best-selling console ever by the end of its lifetime, selling over 158 million units and overtaking the PlayStation 2, end quote. Officially, Nintendo are saying that it believes Switch is still in the middle phase of its life cycle and that it's seeking a sixth year of growth aided by the new OLED model. This is just interesting. I mean, you know, there has to be a new Switch at some point. When that comes, it's sounding like people are starting to predict that could be about 2 to 2.5 years away.
Yeah, which is pretty normal. You know, I referenced out, you know, like, yes, they have the OLED, but, you know, it's pretty standard now. You know, like, we come out with a PlayStation 3 and then you get the PlayStation 3 Slim, you know, like, into, you know, it's cycle to, like, boost its life a little bit. You get the Xbox One, and then later on you get the Xbox One X, right? I mean, you get like you get these things that kind of like try to like push it, you know, a little bit longer. But
right.
To give you an idea on the cycle here, currently the Switch is, you know, been around for 5 years. So yep, we're 5 years in on it
recently,
right?
Yeah, March of 2017.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, let's say it does go two more years, we'll essentially be around 7 years. Okay,
yep, that's pretty.
Whereas
standard.
The PlayStation 4, yeah, and Xbox One were both a 7 year life. The Xbox 360 was an 8 year life, and the yep. PlayStation 3 was a 7 year life. Whereas yep. we had said before, the Wii U was 5 years because they wanted to move because it was a short lifespan because they had to because they just they yeah. had to make a move. Whereas the Wii, which was very successful, was 6 years.
Yeah.
So they probably, you know, should have, in hindsight, soaked some more life out of the standard Wii.
Yeah. No kidding. No kidding.
I think it's good. You know, again, Nintendo has been fantastic. I'm a big fan of Nintendo. They're great for my kids. You know, so yeah.
We have 3 Switches in our household.
Oh, really? We only have the one, yeah. but I'm sure at some point I'll have to have a second.
Yeah. I have my launch Switch, and both my kids have their own Switch Lite.
Switch Lite. So. Oh, and I forgot about, yeah, we have the OLED, and then there's the lights. Yeah, totally forgot about that.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, they're strong console.
Yeah.
The Nintendo news continues to roll. Let's look at the software numbers. Holy shit, are they outrageous. Nintendo's numbers do continue to grow. A total of 39 titles sold over 1 million units during Nintendo's fiscal year 22. As a result, software sales grew 1.8% year-on-year to 235.07 million units. That means they sold over 235 million games over this past year. That's not dollar sales. That is number of games they sold, making it the highest annual software sales figure ever posted for a Nintendo platform to date, according to the company. The company confirmed that recent release Kirby the Forgotten Land sold 2.1 million units in 2 weeks, while Pokemon Legends... Yeah, isn't that crazy? While Pokemon Legends Arceus sold 12.64 million units, and Metroid Dread has managed 2.9 million units.
On Pokemon,
yep. Yeah. Okay. Nintendo reiterated that it expects to ship first-party titles such as Splatoon 3, Bayonetta 3, and Pokemon Scarlet and Violet during 2022. That's fiscal year 2022, so that's ending in March of next year. In addition, Mario Party Superstars has sold 6.88 million units, and Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword sold 3.91 million units. The staggering figure that I read out of this report, Nintendo revealed that it sold almost 35 million Pokemon games in the last financial year.
Yeah. That's why they're releasing another one.
Yeah. Now that's split between several different yeah. Pokemon titles, yeah. but holy shit, 35 million.
Okay.
Pokemon
so
games.
I have an addition here that I want to ask you. So with all okay. these Switches that you have, how many Switch, I don't even know what to call them anymore. How many Switch discs do you own, or the Switch little, what are their, what, you know, the cards? How many cards?
Different
do you
games
own mostly cards or do you own the digital versions?
So with the Switch, because Nintendo are even worse with game sharing than Xbox and PlayStation.
Hell yeah, they are.
I only buy the physical copies so that my kids can actually like share them yeah. between each other.
Yeah.
I don't know. We probably have 30 plus Switch games.
Okay. So it's outrageous. Because I only have the one Switch. And because, again, you know, I've already dealt with the kids have lost one. And, you know, I mean, they're just hard to manage. And, like, I'm all in on, you know, like, my Xbox, you know, I have the S because, again, my mm-hmm. kids play it. It's just I digital buy everything. Like, I don't own copies yeah. of shit anymore, right?
Yeah.
Over all the consoles, because they do it a little bit, all of them do, but shit, Nintendo, I'm just curious how much of those sales are physical versus online. Nintendo's online marketplace is fucking expensive. I don't care how long that game has been out.
Yeah.
It's $60.
It's
$60. Like, yeah. whereas I feel like I can get online games from the others regularly, you know, $29, whatever, you know, yeah. they could come off. Nintendo is like, hey, you can get this. Yeah. I mean, literally, I can go to Walmart and get it and it's $29. But you want it online? you're going to pay us $60 for it.
Yeah.
So then you look at stuff like that, $235 million. I'm just curious how much of that is online, which means full price, man.
Yeah. I would bet their average price per sale is more in the like $40 to $50 range. Whereas like when you see like 15 million copies of Spider-Man, you know that a bunch of those were sold at like $20.
Yeah.
So it's pretty wild.
So that's all I just wanted to point that out is we just said how big a number that is, 235 million units. And I have a feeling that it's at big bucks too.
They're making
a ton of money.
I also have multiple copies of Animal Crossing in my household because both of my kids want it.
Yeah.
And now my wife has thought about it. So I can just see myself buying a third copy of Animal Crossing at some point. All right. Anyway, that's a lot of love for Nintendo. We don't normally talk about Nintendo, but they are just making bank. And so there you go, Nintendo fans. There's your obligatory once a quarter love for Nintendo. All right, number six, Electronic Arts, EA, has said during its latest earnings report that it's planning to release a, quote, major IP and a remake in the fourth quarter of its current fiscal year. The games are two of five titles scheduled to release during the 3 months ending in March 31st, 2023. The four total undisclosed titles scheduled for release in that quarter are listed as major IP, partner title, remake, and sports title. The previously announced game coming during that quarter is EA Sports PGA Tour. So just to kind of give you a sort of a whole holistic picture, they gave a FY23 title slate. So Q1, they have F122, and which we already know that's coming out here in just a month or so.
Yeah.
For Q2, they've got their next FIFA and their next Madden game, which I think we can bank those. Those always come out in September of every year. We know that. So they're scheduled for Q3. They've got Need for Speed and NHL. NHL, obviously, we know those always come out in October of every year. We know that. That makes sense. Need for Speed seems like their flagship sort of first-person-ish title for this year since there's no Battlefield. So that makes sense. But then in Q4, they've stacked a bunch of games. So Q4 would be January 1st of 23 through March 31st of 23. And that's where they've stacked PGA Tour, major IP, partner title, remake, and sports title. So what are our guesses for those? Well, here's what I've got for you. The partner title referred to could be Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order 2, which is sort of the best or the worst kept secret in the industry right now.
I think that's what it is for sure.
Yeah. Which was until recently reportedly targeting a 2022 release. So this would make sense if it's pushed to the first part of 2023. While the Dead Space remake was just announced today as having a January 2023 release date. So that remake game is certainly Dead Space. What is the major IP and what is the sports title? Well, here are my two guesses for you. The major IP, I'm going to throw out Dragon Age 4. That's been the one that we know BioWare's been working on for a while. That's been kind of up and down, but that's kind of my shot at a major IP that seems like it's the next most plausible game upcoming from an EA studio.
So
we know there's not.
I just want to jump in for 1 second, which I know they don't say this, but when I read this, what went to my brain was not it is one of their IPs. I read it as a new IP, like something like, you know, let's say it's a brand new game that is, you know, a new intellectual property that they don't have yet. And I could be wrong on that, but that's how I read this. You are most likely correct, by the way, that it is something like Dragon Age, but I just was viewing it as something that they have, it's new that they've not announced yet. And that's why they're not naming it.
Sure.
To me.
Maybe so. Maybe you're right. I would have thought they would have actually tagged in the word new IP.
I agree with you. New. Yeah. And that's where when I hear you talk about it more, I'm like, you know, you're probably right, but I read it as new.
Right. I could also speculate that maybe major IP is actually the Jedi Fallen Order game and partner title is something more like It Takes Two, which was not developed by an in-house EA studio, but was published by them. So that could be what's going on there. So the sports title, my guess is for that, We know that they've been trying to revive the NBA Live series. The last one came out in 2019. Yeah. They've been delaying it every year for a little while. Basketball season starts somewhere around the March timeframe, right? Somewhere in there.
Right.
So one of my guesses would be finally them releasing a new NBA Live game.
Mm-hmm.
My other guess, we know that they're trying to develop a new college football game.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Maybe they launch something alongside the title game, you know, the national title game in February. When we finally get that college football sports game.
Yeah.
Those are my guesses. What do you think?
If they came out with the college football game, I'm just going to tell you, it would be a big seller.
I would agree.
It almost doesn't matter with the quality. It would be one of those that it could be like Battlefield 2042, where in a month no one's playing it, they'd sell a gajillion copies right off the bat. Like, whoop, everybody would freaking buy it. Everyone,
dude. I have not bought ever a single Madden title. I would buy day one.
I'm with you. I'm not a huge Madden guy. I played every single NCAA football. I loved it.
Yep.
I'm just not a big fan of Madden, man.
So some other numbers from this financial call or earnings call. Live services accounted for 71% of Electronic Arts' total business during its fiscal year ending March 31st, 2022. It was a record year for the publisher, which reported total net bookings of $7.5 billion, up 21% year over year. The live services net bookings grew 17% for a total of $5.4 billion of that $7.5, and that made up over 71% of their total business. Just unbelievable. I mean, that's FIFA packs, Apex Legends,
Madden Ultimate, although me and you aren't into Madden, Madden is still a big, and so Madden Ultimate Team also is a big proponent there. The only comment I wanted to add to this is this just goes to say they had this huge year. And by the way, a huge live service for them game is Battlefield 2042, and it's been a complete flop. So imagine if it actually did good, which is why they're like, we got to get this shit right. And I'll make a
crazy
real quick, small little comment on another story that broke this week was that, EA CEO, came out and said that the company was rethinking Battlefield from the ground up, like, completely change everything about it.
That was a big story too. And like in any other normal episode week, that would have been one of our news stories, but
one comment and just move on. Like they're full on scrapping it and completely changing. I wouldn't be surprised one bit. Cause EA DICE is who handles it. I wouldn't be surprised one bit if they turned it over to like the Respawn or one of their other divisions and said like, hey, hook this up.
Yeah, it's certainly possible. But I mean, you're looking at those numbers, this is why PlayStation want 10 of their 25 games to be live service games.
There's a reason why we go with one of the biggest games of all time, World of Warcraft. And that model was a massive success. And no games do that model anymore. Because games like Fortnite and League of Legends come along and are free games and make a shit ton more money than them. Live service is a money making machine.
And I mean, I just want to say too, I see a lot of people saying that like, Game Pass subscription servers, those are going to be the drivers for the race to the bottom on the console market space. I just say, just look at this. I mean, we already know what the race is. I mean, these are free to play games that monetize through many other ways, and they are making fucking bank.
Yep, absolutely.
This is, I mean, everyone's sitting there talking about how Game Pass isn't making money for Microsoft, and then you're going to tell me that's going to create the race to the bottom when meanwhile EA is posting record numbers with $5.4 billion of net bookings for live service elements.
I mean, let's just go with Epic Games is worth somewhere in the range of, we talked about this before, the $50 to $60, $70 billion, right? Epic Games exists because of Fortnite. yeah, which is a free to play live service game. Fortnite essentially made a $70 billion company.
Yeah. Which for those of you that don't remember, Fortnite was not originally free to play. It was not a battle royale. Right. It was like a single player,
like zombie type of,
almost like
an H1Z1 survival kind of. Yeah.
Yeah. It was totally different. Yep. And they were like, oh shit, this isn't working. Just for some perspective, $5.4 billion is equivalent to the sale of roughly around 152 million copies of console games. So, like, you think about, like, Sony being like, oh, we sold 15 million copies of God of War and 15 million copies of Spider-Man, and that's great.
Now,
and then you look at this.
I'm going to back up a little bit here and go with, okay, Nintendo sold 235 million copies.
Yeah.
To my knowledge, Nintendo is not huge in the live service. There's not a lot of games that I can think of that Nintendo does much on the live service outside of their Nintendo Online, which is a bit of a live service.
Like, you could play Fortnite on Nintendo.
Yeah, I just mean like, but Nintendo's not dipping into that, right? Like, that's just not their model. So they do it a different way. Nintendo has always done it a very different way, but
it works for them.
Yeah. So
very, very interesting. All right. Staying with Electronic Arts, number 7, EA has confirmed that it's ending its partnership with FIFA following the release of the next entry in its long-running football series. After FIFA 23's release later this year, EA will begin, quote, a new era in July 2023 with the introduction of the EA Sports FC series. After ending its near 30-year partnership with FIFA, EA has said that it will launch the new franchise alongside over 300 licensed partners. Quote, everything you love about our games will be a part of EA Sports FC. The same great experiences, modes, leagues, tournaments, clubs, and athletes will be there. Ultimate Team, Career Mode, Pro Clubs, and Volta Football will all be there, end quote. Meanwhile, FIFA itself, the entity FIFA, the Fédération Internationale de Football Association, I'm terrible with my French accent, but there you go, I butchered it. They have confirmed it will launch a rival game to Electronic Arts' newly announced EA Sports FC, with discussions currently ongoing with leading game publishers, media companies, and investors, end quote, in regard to the development of a new FIFA simulation football game for 2024. We knew this was coming. Yep. We talked about this several times in the show. I called it EA Sports FC. That's exactly what they're fucking calling the game.
How long until it's just called EAFC? Because EA Sports FC is a fucking terrible name.
Yeah.
It's just too long. It's FIFA or EA Sports FC. Like, just call it EAFC. Like, I don't understand why it's not EAFC. I hate the name, by the way. Hate it. It should just be EAFC. Like, I don't understand why they made this name.
I get it, because there is Electronic Arts and then there is EA Sports. And that's the differentiator between their sports divisions and their other games.
I don't care. It's terrible. And
so I get it, but I agree. It's a mouthful.
It's a mouthful. I don't like it. At some point, I fully expect this to just evolve into EAFC.
I just expect people to just keep calling it FIFA.
There's that too, right? Like, the other comment I have on this, we've known this is coming. I absolutely love that the president Gianni Infantino or whatever came out, and his statement is, I can assure you that the only authentic, real game that has the FIFA name will be the best one available for gamers and football fans. Like, this is totally like a
fucking idea.
This is 1,000%. And he had some other comments too. He straight up is coming out and trying to make this comment too, alongside they make an announcement and he like tweets out something afterwards in response. It was totally like but we won the divorce. You know what I mean? But we won. And ultimately this whole thing came down to that they're a corrupt company with a freaking corrupt president that got greedy. Yeah. They were doing 150 million a year annually, right? And their demand was $1 billion every World Cup cycle. So over double the money is what they wanted. And by the way, they also, I learned recently, I didn't know this from before, they also, a part of that new demand of $1 billion wanted to have the rights to license out to other developers. So basically, like, hey, we want you to pay us $1 billion to be able to use this. Oh, but we're not going to make you exclusive. We also want to be able to give FIFA the name to other people too. And it's like, it was like, F you. The other thing that I, at some point, I'm kind of like, yes, I know we have known this is coming for a while, but I almost half expect a lawsuit to come out of this from EA, because in this announcement, FIFA, in their stupidity and their corruptness, has played their cards a little too heavy, and they have a non-simulation version of a game with the FIFA name coming out that will be ready to play at the Qatar World Cup.
Yeah.
How long do you think that's been in development? They have been already doing this shit while under contract with freaking, or it could be garbage, but I just think they've already been doing it. They are greedy as shit. They're going to turn around and try to get the best of both worlds. And so they have, and when I say like the simulation, they're going to try to come out with their own simulation FIFA version, but they're also going to try to have like a Volta arcade type of version, right? That's going to be World Cup based. Like, and they're trying to say, and he tried to say in one of his statements that essentially, like, what makes FIFA good is our name. None of the shit that FIFA actually does to make the game is what's good. And I'm like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. What makes the game that we know of as FIFA right now good is all of the development work behind the game, how smooth the simulation of the game is, the ultimate detail team product,
on all of the players.
Yep. And I think more specifically, we really have to point to the individual license agreements that they've secured.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the big things that Pro Evolution Soccer never had. They never really had the license agreement. So even when PES was a comparably good simulation product, I still didn't buy PES because I didn't want to play as London FC instead of Arsenal.
Yeah.
Like, I just, that's the way it was. So.
And some of the major clubs have come out and given support to EA over this too. In the middle of all this, you know, against FIFA, basically, like, we're in support of EA.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I think that's a smarter play. I mean, they have individual license agreements with EA.
Yeah.
So, and FIFA, I mean, they're
literally just,
I have World nothing Cup. Good to say about FIFA.
I don't either.
I
don't either.
As an organization,
they they proved that Qatar was corrupt and it's still in fucking Qatar.
Yeah.
I don't understand. That's how corrupt it is. Oh, hey, by the way, this is super corrupt. We've proved it. Some people went to jail, et cetera. Da, 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 da. Oh, yeah, we're going to leave it there. What?
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy, right? You know, what can you do? I saw some people tweeting something like when they said that FIFA announced that they were gonna do their own game. So people were quote tweeting. I imagine it'll be something like a GTA game where you go around stealing from people and making bribes.
That's great. Like,
yep.
Sounds about Saints right. Row.
Saints Row. Yeah. Yeah.
No, it just would be bully. That's it'd be the highest quality. We're giving it too much credit with GTA. It's just gonna be bully.
Yeah. Bully. Yeah. There you go. All right. Moving on. Number eight. Capcom has announced its ninth consecutive year of operating income growth, record high net sales, and the fifth consecutive year of record high profits at all levels. For the 12 months ending in March 31st, 2022, net sales were up 15.5% year on year at 110 billion yen, which converts to $847 million. Operating income was up 24%, and ordinary income was up 27.2%. During this period, Capcom released Resident Evil Village, which I loved. I talked about that at the end of the year show last year. Monster Hunter Stories 2, Wings of Ruin, which shout out to our longtime listener, Kyle, who I'm sure loved Monster Hunter 2. Those sold 6.1 million and 1.5 million units respectively. So again, good sales for Capcom itself. Looking ahead to the current fiscal year, Capcom said it's expecting a 10th consecutive year of record growth, with major new titles including Monster Hunter Rise Sunbreak predicted to increase its net sales by 9% for the year. So Capcom feel like they are going to keep growing. I wonder what they've got planned maybe some other Resident Evil stuff. Mm-hmm. We know that that's in the pipeline, along with their Monster Hunter stuff. I mean, Capcom are crushing it lately, and I'm happy for them. I'm really happy for them. They've put out some really good games lately. So good stuff to Capcom. Anything more you want to say about them?
Anytime I talk about Capcom, I just want to
Oh, I don't know where you're going with this one. Oh,
come on, Capcom. That's the fighting Ryu sound where he does.
You're
not fighting fire. Game, sure.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. They did. I'm gonna get myself in trouble because I'm not a fighting game fan. What was Capcom's biggest one? I was gonna say Street Fighter. Yeah. Since we're bringing up Street Fighter, that could be part of this 9%. They just announced Street Fighter 6, so maybe that's part of their plan for fiscal year 23. Yeah. All right, number 9. Sony has announced that it has shipped 2 million PlayStation 5 consoles during Q4 of its fiscal year, bringing the total number of consoles shipped to 19.3 million. At 11.5 million PS5 consoles shipped during the FY21 financial year, it means Sony missed its initial target of 14.8 million consoles by a little over 3 million units. We've been saying this is supply constraints, and it continues to show in the sales. The company has also revealed that as of the end of March 2022, 47.4 million users were subscribed to PlayStation Plus. That's down just a little bit and then monthly active users were also down again just a little bit, about 3 million active users. Total active users, 106 million. That's down 3 million, as I said, from fiscal year 20. PS5 and PS4 first-party game sales were up a massive 84% during Q4, jumping from 7.9 million last year to 14.5 million in FY21. The ratio of downloaded software sales fell slightly from 79% to 71%. So people are back buying a little bit more physical copies of games. So there you have it on the sales front. Sony doing really, really well themselves. I think this is probably a mixture of, you know, Gran Turismo 7, which sold really strongly, and Horizon Forbidden West, which sold really strongly. I don't think that PlayStation followed up launch of PS5 with mini games in that sort of first quarter of 2022 or 2021 period last year. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why we're seeing this big jump, because they did get two strong flagship titles out in the first quarter of this year. That's kind of confusing. So like I'm saying first quarter for us from a calendar year perspective, but it's really Q4 for them from a fiscal fiscal year perspective. The company said on Tuesday it expects to sell significantly more PS5 consoles during its current fiscal year, which will end March of 2023, estimating around 18 million units. Sony said it felt very comfortable it could achieve that target. So I guess they're thinking that they are going to get some consoles out to the market this year. Sony also expects sales for its games and network business to increase significantly, approximately 34% during its current fiscal year, thanks to an increase in hardware sales and third-party games. Very interesting that they said third-party games. Makes you wonder, are we really going to be getting any God of War this year?
Yeah.
They're looking to external partners to boost their software sales. That's the last of these sort of fiscal year updates that I found. Anything to say about PlayStation or anything to say about all of this, I guess, in general?
Just stop delaying games.
Yes, please. Please. I'm actually, in some ways, though, I'm a little bit excited.
I was going to say that, too. Like, it gives us a break to actually play games that we can't get to. I mean, I knew exactly where you were about to go.
Like I absolutely, once I finish Ghostwire Tokyo, it's my games that I have absolutely planned to play this summer. Look at me. Are
say it.
Days Gone.
Thank you.
And Ghost of Tsushima.
And in which order?
I want to play Ghost first.
You son of a...
Days... But maybe I'll think about it. I'll do you a kindness and play Days Gone first, since it won't matter, since nothing else is fucking coming out. I'll get to both of them anyway. All right. Anything else before we move on to game announcements?
Nope.
All right. So game announcements. Well, I guess upcoming releases real quick first. Only a couple left for May because nothing is coming out. This week on May 10th, Salt and Sacrifice released for PlayStation 5, 4, and PC. And then on May 26th, that's a couple weeks from now, Sniper Elite 5 is due to release.
You and your dad kind of game.
Yes, I am looking forward to playing Sniper Elite 5 with my dad. Mm-hmm. Apparently, there's a special trophy for shooting Hitler in the balls, so I'm excited for that. That's going to be fun.
As there should be, by the way.
Yes, there should be. And then, of course, the day after that, May 27th, Kenobi will premiere with its first two episodes. I am very excited for that.
Like, super excited.
All right. Here we are. Game announcements. EA and Respawn Entertainment have announced the Apex Legends mobile release date, having recently confirmed that the game would launch this month. On Wednesday, they revealed that May 17th, so just next week, will be the release date for iOS and Android if you want to play Apex Legends mobile.
Hey, just FYI, I'm back on the I don't play mobile games train. I've officially finally kicked my habit of my mobile game. F mobile games, who cares?
God bless you.
Right? Finally. Right? Okay. I have been released from the dark hold.
Good job. All right. Excellent. All right. Number two, EA. Again, another EA game partnered with Middle Earth Enterprises to develop a new free-to-play mobile game called The Lord of the Rings Heroes of Middle Earth. This will be a collectible RPG featuring turn-based combat and a wide roster of characters from across the Lord of the Rings and Hobbit universes. It will see players battle through iconic stories from the books and films. No release date with this, just an announcement that it is coming in 2022. Number three, another EA game, Dead Space Remake's release date has been announced. The sci-fi horror game will be releasing for PlayStation 5, Xbox consoles, and PC on January 27th of 2023. I actually really like January releases, like, because if they get it out in January of 2023, I might actually play this game just because there's never anything in January. Mm. So I always get excited for what little game I might try out in January. Number four, LEGO Brawls is the latest to make the transition from Apple Arcade to console, with console release planned later this summer. The game appears to be a Super Smash Bros. Style arena brawler, albeit with character creation components. Number five, Warner Bros. Games and DC has this week revealed the first gameplay of Nightwing and Red Hood in Gotham Knights. The upcoming open world third-person action RPG in development by Warner Bros. Games Montreal. Gotham Knights can be played in two-player co-op and will feature Nightwing, Robin, Batgirl, and Red Hood. It was also announced with this reveal that Gotham Knights will no longer be releasing for PS4 and Xbox One. This will be a new-gen title only. Gotham Knights is scheduled to launch worldwide on October 25th, 2022. Jason, what did you think of this gameplay reveal?
Looked cool. I mean, I've been looking forward to this game for a while, so...
Yeah, I don't know what looked new gen about it. So
I don't either. I didn't see anything that was like groundbreaking. Like, I've never seen that before. It looked cool.
Yeah, it definitely looks cool. I'm really excited for this one. I know some people were a little bit down on it, but I don't know. I think it looks fun. Yeah. The bike looked cool.
I've seen the same thing. I've heard some people say that. You know, there's some negatives that they weren't. I saw one of the big things is there's people who are upset that about it being able to be played in co-op. And I'm like, why? Why is that a problem?
Yeah, no, that's cool. Yeah, that's cool to me. I mean, they only showed Nightwing and Red Hood, but those two had very distinct characteristics and fighting styles, which is really neat, too. Yeah. I like that idea. All right. Finally, the last little announcement. Netflix has released a teaser trailer for its upcoming Resident Evil TV series. The show, which is set to debut on the streaming platform on July 14th, is set in New Raccoon City and will feature the Umbrella Corporation from the video game series. All right. That's it. That's it for game announcements. Free games, May's PlayStation Plus games are out there. May's Xbox games with gold are out there. Don't forget about them. Apparently, the next free Epic Game Store will be a, quote, mystery title. I don't know what that means. That should be available next week, starting May 19th.
It's so bad they're not going to tell you. You just have to click the button to install it, and you'll find out.
Yeah, exactly. And then you'll find out. Until then, Prey and Jotun Valhalla Edition are available. And then also May's Amazon Prime games are out there if you haven't checked those out.
I know it's been out since the last time. I don't know the exact release it was out, but I just wanted to give a shout out to, on Game Pass, you have The Trek to Yomi, which again, I think looks really freaking cool. I think it's maybe been out for maybe just a couple weeks or something on Game Pass.
It came out on May 5th, and so we talked about it. I talked about
it
last week.
Not a couple weeks, a week. But anyway, it looks really freaking cool. I'd like to at some point try that.
I did download it. I have not tried it yet.
Yeah, yeah.
So, in terms of Game Pass games that launched this week into the service, Danganronpa 2, Ayuden Chronicle Rising, and This War of Mine Final Cut. Those three are now available in Game Pass. Jason, that's it. I mean, this is a jam-packed episode, but we're right at 2 hours. I think we did a good job with the content that we covered. Mm-hmm. Anything to share before we head out for this week?
No, man, just, you know, hope everybody has a good week. You know, play your games hard. Cause you don't have another one coming for a while. So start planning what your backfill is, you know?
Yeah. Go buy Assassin's Creed Valhalla and all of its DLC. Yeah, that'll take about 200
everybody
hours.
Write into the show. Let me know what your gamer tag is for The Division. We'll raid together. We'll be fine.
There you go. All right. Yeah. Jason's looking for a raid partner.
Yep.
All right.
I will say this. It'd be cool if we could do like some user gameplay with some people. It'd be cool to do some like Rocket League or something with some people.
I'd be down for that for sure. Yeah, that'd be really neat. Engage with the community some night. That'd be a lot of fun. All right. I got nothing else. Jason, you want to take us out for this week?
Yeah, sounds good. All right. Well, guys, thank you everyone for listening to the 95th episode of the TriCast Gaming Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. Remember to like, subscribe, and review on your podcasting app of choice. If you have any questions for the show, DM us on Twitter or Facebook. The show will be back again next Friday for episode number 96, 4 away from the big giant orgy we're going to have. Have a great weekend. Stay safe. Game hard.